Let me get the dock on the right place. Okay, welcome everybody to the Quill and Korea podcast. This is episode 12. My name is Brandon Hall, and I'm joined as always by my wonderful co-host, Ash. Ash, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. A little sleepy, but otherwise fine.
Yeah.
How are you?
Same. I did not get much sleep.
Yeah.
And it's a busy week for me, so.
Yep. We're going to roll with it.
Yeah, like we always do. We have some fun topics to go over today. We're going to talk about tropes in marketing, DNFing books, supporting characters, and how to stay organized as a writer, maybe. And before we get into all that, Ash, what are you currently reading?
I am still working on Lady Macbeth, but I also picked up The Sky on Fire. And I can't remember the author's name. I think it releases today, actually. It's like a dragon fantasy book, and I'm enjoying it so far. What are you reading?
Very cool. I have not heard of that one, but it sounds interesting with the dragons. That's a quick way to win me over. No, I'm still literally. I'm still cycling through like the three books that I've mentioned in the past few episodes. Last Argument of Kings, still working on that. To Winter Nights, still working on that. And then Fire and Blood, I'm kind of reading like as the episodes like reach that part of the book.
Oh, fun.
I read it like to, I like to compare and see how things.
That is a great idea. I love that. I might have to do that. I might have to catch up and then next season do that exact thing.
Yeah, it's easy with Fire and Blood too, because it's, since it's like a history, it's kind of condensed. It's not like several chapters that I have to read, really.
Yeah.
It's usually just a few pages to see the what the episode covered.
Right.
So it's not too much, cool. too much of an undertaking, really.
But, that's great.
Yeah, still working my way through those. Probably will be for a while.
Yeah. It's a good list, though. A good keep your interest. If you feel yourself waning in one regard, you can switch to the other.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Nicole says she finished Inkblood Sister Scribe.
Ooh, that sounds really good.
7 out of 5. Are you saying, like, it was that good? Like, 7 out of 5? I'm confused.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 7 out of 5. I guess if you're a 5-star rating system, you're like, it's a 7. But
okay.
Out of a 10, would it be like a 13? Oh, literally all the stars. Awesome. Got it. Perfect. Good recommendation, Nicole.
All right. Well, before we get into our topics for the week, we do have some exciting podcast updates. If you followed Ash's new social media, the Instagram account,
yes.
You might know about some of these. But I'm going to reiterate what we said last week. We moved our live time up to 5:30. If you're here, obviously you know that already. But for those who missed it, we moved from 6 p.m. Eastern to 5:30 p.m. Eastern. So if you come on and we're in the middle of talking, that's why. There will be no episode of Quill and Query next week. We will return on 7:23. Mm-hmm. We will be taking a break. And yeah, I already mentioned the new social. Ash has created a wonderful Instagram account for Quill and Query that you can go follow for all of the official updates and episode announcements.
Yes.
And things like that. It looks amazing. Very exciting. We're going to be working on expanding our social media presence more, as we've said. And kind of going along with that, we're going to be changing the recording software that we're using. So right now we use TikTok Live Studio. But if you've been watching us for a while, you know there's been some technical difficulties and it comes with a lot of limitations. So we're going to be switching to a new platform called Riverside, which should still let us stream to TikTok. But if not, we'll update you guys on where to catch the stream going forward. But it's going to come with lots of quality improvements and help us make clips for social media that we can post on TikTok and YouTube and things like that. So it'll kind of help us realize a lot of the goals that we've had, I think, since the beginning of starting the podcast, that we've just been kind of limited by the software, unfortunately. And it will let Ash use her like really cool microphone that she has been wanting to use so badly.
I'll have a better, I'll sound better on the Spotify Apple podcast listening experience. It'll just be better overall, I think. So we're excited about it.
Yeah, sorry, I ran out of breath from all those updates for a minute, but Ash, did you have anything that you wanted to add to those updates?
I do have one more. So we also have, it's on the Instagram, the Quill and Query podcast at Instagram. Mm-hmm. We also have an email now. Right. It's literally quillinquirypodcast@gmail.com, all lowercase, all one word, no ampersand, spell out the and. But it's also, yeah, it's on the TikTok or Instagram. So if you have any questions or you have any topics you want to discuss, slash have us research or any type of feedback at all, you can send us a little email or just message us on Instagram. I'll be checking those pretty frequently. And as Brandon said, yeah, we'll be creating a TikTok soon once we get the new software. And it'll just, yeah, it's like a new chapter for us after 12 episodes. So it's really exciting. I'm excited.
I'm so excited for all of the, like, the quality improvements alone, but then the ability mm-hmm. to cut clips with Riverside
yeah.
and pretty much, like, everything that we've talked about doing since the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And
just,
So, yeah, it's going to be cool. And yeah. Thank you to Bobby for sharing the live. That was very kind
Thanks,
of you.
Thanks, Bobby. Yeah.
Okay, no audience.
But I think those are it.
Yeah, sorry. I didn't mean to jump
in. No, that's okay. No, you're good. You're good. I think that's all I have for right now. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, no audience questions this week. And we just have one indie mm-hmm. release to spotlight. This is going to be coming out, I think this is next week when we're off. So we're going to shout it mm-hmm. out now. On July 18th, we have Dragons, Briars, and Blades by Ash, if you know this, and I'm pronouncing it wrong, please correct me, but is it Emily mm-hmm. Michelle or Emily Michael?
I actually don't know how to pronounce it, okay. But Emily, M-I-C-H-E-L, I think yes. it's Michael okay. or Michelle, who's to say?
Maybe it's something
Sorry
else.
For butchering that, but yeah.
But, yeah, apologies
but
if
check
you
it
got
out.
Your name wrong, but, yeah, Dragons, Briars, and Blades, that sounds interesting. I don't know anything else yeah. about it, but I like the title.
Me too. I'll be checking it out for sure.
All right. Well, we can move into our publishing and books discussion, our topics for the week. I tried to pick some fun ones for like our last TikTok live episode. I know it's not like our last live episode, but it marks the end of a chapter. So I tried to pick
yes.
some good ones. I want to start with this one. I see this marketing strategy a lot on both TikTok and Instagram, mm-hmm. and it's using tropes in marketing to kind of try to attract your target audience, I guess, the people that will be, you know, reading, the readers that you want to attract. Sorry, I'm stumbling with mm-hmm. my words here because it's been a long day.
That's okay. Long day.
But I was curious, as one, a reader, we like to talk about things from mm-hmm. the reader perspective and the writer perspective, but one, as a reader,
yeah.
how do you feel when you see like an ad, and it doesn't always have to be like marked as an ad, but maybe it's a post from an author or something sharing their book mm-hmm. and it kind of goes, It's just a list of tropes, like a shopping list almost. Do you, is that effective for you, or are you kind of put off by that?
I don't see that very often, which I think is probably a good thing. Mm-hmm. I think this goes back to our conversation a few weeks ago about like trigger warnings.
Yeah.
I don't mind a couple, obviously very general tropes, but if you're listing out all of them, to me, that's almost like a spoiler.
Yeah.
I completely understand wanting to hook people, enemies to lovers, a trope, right? Like, if you say that, I'm already interested.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're starting to list all of the ones that are in your book, I feel like the mystery kind of goes away because I already am either going to anticipate those things and maybe the story will eventually get there, but that's book two and not book one or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't mind you using tropes as a selling point, but if it's a laundry list, I think that's when I start to be like, all you're doing is tell, like, you're just telling me now.
Yeah.
And I want there to be a little mystery. So
yeah.
I think that's how I feel about book tropes. Too many.
Yeah. I feel the same about, like, when there's too many, and kind of just spoils the book for
mm-hmm.
me. Now, granted, when I do see it, it's mostly for romance or romanticy, which I will admit I'm not like an avid reader of that genre. I don't have
sure.
anything against it. It's just not like not my go-to. But
yeah.
I wonder if that might be why, because when it comes to like romanticy, people have, you know, their likes, whether it's, you know, enemies to lovers, friends to lovers, or all the
mm-hmm.
to lovers.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I feel like, so maybe you can correct, or you can correct me if this is like not a popular take in the romance reader base. But so do you want to know if it's like enemies or friends to lovers or whatever going into it? Because I feel like if I was going to pick up a book, I don't want to know how the relationship is going to end. Now, granted, I know there are like there are do's and don'ts in romance, like that, you know, readers are looking for, and there's kind of a formula, not saying that in a bad way, but there's expectations. And so you probably, I'm just trying to remember, but you read more romance than I do, I'm assuming.
I read some.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. It's so, not my go-to.
Okay. When you do read romance or romanticy, is it is it the same thing? Like, you don't want to know if it's going to be enemies to lovers, or do you like, how do you want to know about how the relationship is going to evolve, or do you prefer to explore that as you read?
So if it's a romance or a romanticy, yes, okay. I want to know. I am not a huge friends to lovers person. If we're just talking romance, I find that to be very just like too sweet and too boring. I like the tension of enemies to lovers. Yeah. But that's pretty much all I want to know, right? Like, the longer the plot, the better I think that is. Like, the buildup is so much better. But I like to know that that's kind of where we're going to go.
Okay.
That doesn't necessarily mean we know who the enemies and the lovers are. You know, that's true. Like, it could switch halfway through book two, and then you're like, oh, here's the real enemy to lover. You know, there, things can change. So that doesn't necessarily spoil it for me, because I want to avoid the friends to lovers or, like, the lovers to enemies trope, whatever. I don't mind. When it comes to, like, general fantasy, as long as I don't really even need to know if there's romance in there. I think a lot of people on here, me included, want to, like, have that as a part of the intrigue, because I want to get more women into high fantasy without as much romance. But I do feel like the genres now are very romance heavy. So, of course, like, obviously, I enjoy romance too. So I want people to know that there is enemies to lovers in here. However, it takes place. It's a long haul.
Yeah.
And preface it with, like, this is a part of the puzzle. It's not the whole picture or the main focus. So, yeah, it depends in the fantasy world. But, yeah, with the romanticy, I need to know. But that's really all I need to know.
Yeah.
Right? If it just says romance, that's fine too, because if it's not specifically in enemies to lovers, I'm intrigued then.
Yeah.
But that tends to be the trope that I like the best.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Because I know in the romance reading community, there's, you know, everyone has their favorites. Enemies to lovers definitely seems to be a big one.
Yeah.
So I can see, like, why from a marketing perspective you might want to advertise that. But, yeah. I think, so as, from a, like, an author perspective, could you ever see yourself using tropes to market your book in that way? Or would it be more like very generalized, like, themes? Because it sounds like you don't like the laundry list of spoilers either.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I think it gets, I don't really, like, know yet. I haven't even really talked, you and I are kind of close to the chest, kind of, we don't really talk too much about the stories.
Right.
I think when it gets to the advertising point, it is best to almost, like, do a little magic trick and get people, like, interested, right? Yeah. Like, enemies to lovers is such, like, a high drive for a lot of people. So I think they're useful tools for sure, but it's more of, like, I have seen, and you've probably seen this too, where it's, like, the tropes are listed, like, with every post about it, and it's, like, not necessarily huge into that. I think that's where you get into, like, you're, like, beating your reader over the head. I like to think that my readers, and I'm sure you feel the same way as well, of, like, I trust my readers to get there eventually. And they are smart enough to pick up on the things. So I don't necessarily need to, like, put the carrot in their mouth, but I can use it to get them to where I need them to go. What about you? How do you feel about tropes in general with, like, advertising? Is it something that you pick up on or, like, look for when you're looking into a book?
Yeah, so honestly, I don't really look for specific tropes when I'm picking up a book to read it. And I look for, like, certain themes, I guess, but I don't know if you call them tropes. And I kind of think the same way about, like, I know I'm not in a marketing phase for my book yet, but when yeah. I do get to that point, I struggle to think of like some regular tropes that are in my book. Not saying there aren't any, they don't come to mind because I just don't think that way when I'm writing them.
Yeah, so, me neither. Yeah.
I would really have to like think about it and how I would approach that. It's very mm-hmm. hard for me to talk about my book in general too, because so much of the it's a murder mystery, so much of the plot, like, I can't touch on.
Right.
Like, when people ask who's the antagonist or something, I'm like, I can't tell you. It's not.
Yeah, right.
I can't even give you, like, a hint, because that's the whole point of reading
it. Ah, interesting. Okay, yeah.
So, yeah, that makes
sense. I get it, but I also feel like you could still give us some things. We'll get there eventually.
We'll work on it. Yeah. I'm just so, like, because readers are smart. They'll be like, oh, so it means this. Mm-hmm. And they'll figure it out before I intend them to. But
yeah, that's a good point.
All right. Well, now that we touched on
Okay, hold on.
Yeah.
I have a follow-up to the follow-up, and then we can move on. Do you have a trope that when you see, you absolutely despise and you would, like, put a book down? I have one, and it's miscommunication trope. I can't stand it. Like, purposeful miscommunication. If you're two characters from opposite cultures and you can't communicate certain things because it's just not, you know, whatever. Yeah. That's different than, like, active miscommunication. It's pretty much why Fourth Wing stopped being a book that I could read.
Yeah.
Because it was just like, okay, like, is no one asking clarifying questions? What's happening here?
Yeah.
What about you?
Well, that's, so yeah, definitely that, if it's like egregious, like, sometimes I feel like you can do miscommunication well, because people do miscommunicate in real mm-hmm. life. But it really just depends on how it's done. Like, if it's so egregious to the point where I'm like, there's absolutely no reason these two characters did not have this conversation, that will bother me. That'll bother me for the entire book, and that would drag down the whole experience.
Good to know.
Generally not a fan of, like, I don't know if these are tropes, but certain over-the-top characterizations. Like, I'm not a fan of reading from, like, an edgelord's perspective or something like that. It's I just can't do it.
I understand too.
There's even a guy in A Song of Ice and Fire. He's not a perspective he doesn't have a POV chapters, but he's famous in, like, the fan base for being an edgelord, and I don't like reading about him.
You're like,
Yeah, thankfully he's like a side character, so it doesn't affect it.
That's good. Yeah,
but
god, yeah, again, I'm right there with you. If it's like a little sprinkle, that's fine, but if you're relying on this to tell the story and that's the tension, mm-hmm. I'm out.
Looks like we have some new viewers. Hi Zelda, I see the eye emojis.
Hi Zelda.
I accidentally clicked out of the document. Okay. Okay. Well, we just touched on this a little bit, I guess, with that trope, but I wanted to talk about what makes you, Zelda wants to know what A Song of Ice and Fire, Dark Star. That's his name, Dark Star. So his name is edgy too, but he's got like I'm pretty sure he has like the white hair. He's always like brooding and sharpening his sword. And he's always got something like really grim to say. It's but
Dark Star, get out of here.
Because Martin has like 900 other characters that I don't mind, I'll give him the pass. But
there you go. Not every character can be compelling and great.
Yeah,
I get it.
That's true. All right. Well, going off of that, I wanted to talk about what makes you DNF a book. I'm sure all of us have DNF'd a book at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So for you, what are a few things that kind of make you reach that breaking point where you're like, no, I can't read this anymore?
Yeah, this is actually reminding me. I think we might have talked about this or like touched on it in a previous episode. But if your opening sentence, if your story begins with a dream, immediate no. Like, I can't do it. I'm so sorry. Like, which sucks for everyone who used that as a way to introduce like a story, because I know it can be used well in certain circumstances, but that's, and immediately I'm like, okay, that's like red flag number 45 for me. Like, nope, we're not doing that. So usually my mark for a book is 50 to like 80 pages in. If I get to 50 pages and I am bored because the plot is moving too slow, the plot can move slow. And I know you talked about this in the book series that you are reading right now.
Yeah.
The plot can be slow, but as long as the characters and their interactions and the world they're in are interesting and it's world building well, I will be fine at page 50 being like, all right, well, there hasn't been much action, but I can tell, like, we need this info. Like, we're going to get there.
Yeah.
So that's, like, one for me that if you're just, if it's just, like, blocks of text just to explain everything and there's no actual action, that'll make me DNF a book. I will say, like, writing capabilities, as in, if all of our sentences look the same and the structure of each paragraph is pretty identical, that's usually when I'll DNF. I need a variety. I need to feel it like I, even if you're learning how to write, which we all are, but if this is like your first short story or your first book or whatever, you don't need to be a master craftsman, but you should be able to know how to use a hammer and a nail. And if you don't know the basics, that's usually when I'm like, okay, well, this needs to go through some revisions, maybe learn some things, read a couple books about writing and grammar. But yeah, if it reads as juvenile in that way, I will usually DNF. And then usually, honestly, this sounds like so, seems like a weird one, but if your book contains like so much cussing, like, and I'm talking about usually it's like more and more modern romances or, you know, just like modern fiction. I'm a cusser. I cuss a lot, but I can't, I don't want to read it like constantly. That kind of started to happen with Sarah J. Maas's books, like a lot of like vulgarities. And I was like, okay, like just sprinkle it in, like just sprinkle in an F word here and there and we'll be good to go. But so yeah, I think those are my, were those three? Those are my three like DNF.
Checks.
Yeah. What about you?
Well, I'm going to, before I forget, I'm definitely going to add that last one in there. There are some books where it feels like a 12-year-old who just learned how to use the F word. That's what I can't stand reading. Like, there's a difference between a mature use of like profanity and then kind of a childish, you know. I don't know
exactly
what I'm looking for, but
an immaturity. It's like an immaturity thing. Like, you're trying to be cool, and it's like no one really talks like that.
And I was actually, I should add this as a topic later on for one of our future episodes, but there was a big discussion in some writing communities that I was reading through about how, what separates like a dark story from an edgy story, and it about how you handle those more mature themes like adult content and language and violence and things like that. And it was a really interesting conversation, actually, because a lot of people seem to have differing opinions on where the line between like, okay, this is a more dark, mature story versus this feels like it was written by a 12-year-old trying to be edgy. A lot of people disagree on where that line is. So
that's actually a really good topic. Right. Keep a note for that. That would be, maybe that can be one of our new episode.
Yeah, definitely.
Topics.
But yeah, there's that one. I want to also agree I don't remember how you phrase it exactly, but if it feels unedited or very like early stages, first draft, something along those lines, that's usually when I'll have to drop it. There have been, not going to name any names or anything, but there have been some indie books that I've picked up that really could have used some editing. Like if I copy and paste it into Google Docs, there's like a dozen red underlines on the first page. And so just please proofread, just click the spell check
Grammarly
icon, because if there's multiple typos and formatting errors in like the first five pages, I can't get through it. I'm very picky about those things, because to me that conveys how much effort you're putting into telling the story, right? Like if your sentences aren't properly punctuated and formatted, I don't trust your story and your plotting and your character development to have I expected to have the same level of thought put into it, basically.
I fully agree.
Definitely keep that in mind when you are publishing, please, from a reader perspective. Like, the formatting and the grammatical structure of your book is very important to, at least in my experience, how readers are going to perceive the quality of your writing. And then, what else? I know there's got to be more, but those are, those are the biggest two.
I
can usually forgive slow plot, like you said, as long as the characters are interesting. If there is nothing that I'm latching onto, though, like if I'm not feeling the plot, if I'm not feeling the characters or anything by anywhere from 50 to 100 pages in, then usually I'll either put it away and say, like, this is not, it's either not the right book for the right time, or it's just not for me at all. And
I've had to do that with a couple recently this year, which sucked. But also, I feel like that's when the good feedback is important. Of like, if it's just about to be published, or if it's just come out and you read it, there's obviously nothing you can really do except give your honest review to readers. But if you get an advanced copy of something, I think, you know, the balance is you can either just be like, hey, thank you, this just isn't the book for me at this time, like you just said. Or, you know, you can give the feedback and just be like, hey, got 50 pages in, you know, and unfortunately, it's just not a book that is for me for these reasons, right? Like, you don't have to be mean about it or rude about it. But on Goodreads, there have been a couple that I've, like, The Dead Take the A-Train by Cassandra Kaw was one that I really love Cassandra Kaw's writing, but I got 50 pages in, and the biggest thing that annoyed me that I, like, actually, it was the number one reason why I couldn't finish, was because it was supposed to be this, like, very urban, magical world that takes place within hours, like, in New York. But every single object that our characters came into contact with had some sort of, like, magical component to it. And I also didn't really like the characters 50 pages in, but more importantly, like, the phone, the cup, the table, the TV, the coffee maker, like, everything was, like, something fantastical. And that loses its power, right? Like, if everything is magical, then you're not going to be impressed when something magical happens. Anyway, I think it's sometimes it's good to know when to just finish, even if it feels off and you can't put your finger on it. You just have to say, not for me, at least at this time, so...
I did think of two more. They're not necessarily instant DNFs, but they're very close and very hard to win me back after I read these. But one is, like, unbelievably convenient coincidences. Like, we need this magical item. Oh, I just happened to have that in my backpack, and it's never been mentioned before. Like, not once. It's just you don't even know what it is because it just was created for this specific story beat. Characters, usually a main character who is, like, extremely overpowered with no good reason. Like, they have no training. They came from the farm, and they're killing, like, all of the seasoned military veterans. Stuff like that bothers me so much.
Oh my god, totally. Speaking of tropes, it's like, you know, the magical whiz kid, or, like, the magical girl, just like, I've only had a week of training and now I can take down this evil warlord that's reigned for 1,000 years. You're like, girl, on. I'm not a huge fan of those.
Like I said, sometimes I can get past them, but most of the time they're just so egregious that I can't. But yeah,
can't
now,
do
that,
it.
Now, that yeah. we, now that we talked about all those, like, negative things, let's talk about something fun. Book titles. So this, I feel like, comes to every author differently. Do I have sound?
You do.
Okay, TikTok just told me I have no sound. I don't know why.
Weird. I can hear you.
All right. That's all I need to know. So one from a reading or a reader's perspective, does the title of a book have any effect on whether you're going to pick it up? I'm assuming it's yes, but how big is that impact? Like, will you not pick up a book if the title throws you off?
Yes. It's an interesting topic only because it's one, I think that if I go to get it traditionally published, mine will probably not be the same. I don't know. Like, I'm very attached to mine.
Yeah.
And I have a theme for this, like, book series. You know, like, A Filthy Hunger is very much, like, a lot, right?
Yeah.
What's in your brain? It's like, oh, whoa, okay. Mm-hmm. Am I sure that it fits the dark fantasy theme? I think so, but people might not agree with that. So, again, up to interpretation. But and this is only new for me, but the recent uptick in the last, like, 10 years of a court of blank and blank or a crown. No offense to anybody who has then, like, gone on to use these. Mm-hmm. Or, like, a crown of something something. Yeah. Or, like, it's the object or, like, the thing and then the of the thing of the thing. Yeah. I'm getting tired of those, so I am far less inclined to pick anything up nowadays, even if it's, like, I know this could probably be really good. I'm just really, I'm exhausted by it. Only because I think it just got popularized by, like, the Sarah J. Maas's and the G.R.R. Martins of the world, like A Song of Ice and Fire, like a thing of a thing of a thing. So I get it. I totally understand. So that's usually, like, that's my most recent, I'm going to try and find something with a more snazzy title. The one that Nicole said earlier, like, Ink, Blood, Sister, Scribe, like, I'm already intrigued. Like, that sounds amazing. I think that really titles for me, as long as it's unique enough to stand out along with the cover, I'm interested, you know. I'm sure I could, like, look at a bunch of potential titles and just be like, this works, whatever. But I think that's only my limitation recently. It's just, like, the popularization of a certain way of titling things that I'm like, I'm just not inclined to pick it up. Yeah. What about you?
Well, I definitely agree on the format that you just mentioned being, like, way too overdone. I think it does work for some stories. I think there are some stories that, like, genuinely are doing that kind of title format correctly, but so many of them, I feel like, don't communicate to me at all what they're actually about, which I feel like is the main purpose of a title. Like, your title and your cover are to get me to pick it up and read the synopsis. And then maybe the first few pages. But if your title makes me confused, like, in a bad way, because you can, like, make me ask questions in a good way, but if I, like, I see some of those that just don't make sense, really. Like, they don't communicate anything. And those are the titles that I don't like. You can still have a title in that format and win me over, as long as I feel like it makes sense for the story. Like, I pick up the synopsis and, okay, yeah, I see why this is titled this way.
Sure.
And now I say all that, but then I remember my book is titled A Knight of Knives. One thing I want to say is I really agonized over whether I was going to call it that or not, but I could not, and, you know, it might still change, but A Knight of Knives is so, like, straightforward to the point as far as it being, like, a murder mystery and telling you very succinctly what it's about, that I feel like it's fine, and I wasn't really trying to capitalize on that title formula trend. It just kind of fell into place that way.
I disagree. I don't think that falls into any type of, like, category of titling.
I don't think it fits that blank.
It's got it. So what I'm specifically talking about is, like, the three. Like, a something of something and something. Oh, yours is A Knight of Knives, which I think is, like, a good... And it's not just because you're my co-host and you're the host and I'm your co-host and we do this together. But I think that gives enough oomph and you're like, A Knight of Knives? Like, what does this mean? Yeah. A whole night full of knives? What? Yeah, I mean, it's punchy and it works. You know, I personally think A Filthy Hunger does, like, kind of the same thing. Like, you know, what kind of hunger? Like, filthy hunger. Whatever. It's supposed to kind of give this, like, visceral, like, what? It's almost like the... I don't even know what the titles are called, like, how you would categorize those. But... like you said, if it doesn't convey anything, like, if this crown, for example, isn't made of shadow and bone or what, I'm just, like, throwing words out there at this point, you know, it's like, okay, but I'm like, are we fighting over this crown? Does someone wear that? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And I'm kind of babbling about this, but
no, I get what you're saying. Nicole says, it's the first one,
the time of day. Knives.
So, and okay, but part of the
that'd be a cool twist too. Yeah, A Knight of Knives.
I have, and I also have the titles for like a book two, and if I have a book three, which I probably won't, but I have my titles formatted all in that way where it's like they all fit. That's a pet peeve of mine. If I pick up a series and the titles are all like inconsistent, I don't know why it bothers me.
Mm-hmm. But
I like my titles to be somewhat consistent and to all kind of follow a theme. And so I try to do that with my books. Now, on the topic of titles, with A Filthy Hunger and any other story you've written, do the titles come easily to you? Or is it...
No.
Can it just depend on the story?
Yeah, I think it depends on the story. I have a really hard time finding titles or like a title that feels like it works well enough. When A Filthy Hunger was unnamed for so long, I really struggled with like, okay, like what is this? How do I convey I wanted the title to convey an emotion rather than like what this is about in terms of like an action or a thing. And so I like grappled with all of the themes itself and just like, what do both of our, like at their core, like what is the thing? So I kind of like went through this really long process of deep diving into the emotion behind the story and what my characters were experiencing as they meet for the first time. And for some reason, like it clicked and I think I had titled my Pinterest board a long time ago, based off of a photo that I saw. It was like something hunger. And as I was adding to this board, it kind of helped kind of imbue my, I don't know how I got there. So yeah, it was like a lot of thinking and a lot of influence from looking at mood boards and how am I going to set up this story and all of these things. Like, yeah. So if that's a easy way to, no, it's hard. It's hard. And I find it very challenging, and the process to get to A Filthy Hunger was a really long one, and I'm still untitled for the short story because I usually don't. It just takes me forever to figure it out. Chapter titles too. I like chapter titles. I title all of my chapters, but that in of itself is also a challenge. But I find it gives like a, I like it. It usually feels more formal and like important. So yeah, what about you? Do you have trouble? You're going to tell me that no, it's like the easiest thing in the world. I'm going to be dang it.
So for A Knight of Knives, it did not take me nearly as long as it usually does to title something. I still have some stories that I've been plotting longer than this one that still are untitled and probably will be until I write the last sentence. So it really just depends on the story for me, and I guess sometimes it comes easier than others.
Yeah.
With A Knight of Knives just clicked for me because that, and then the other names for like potential sequels came kind of quickly, and so I kind of formed a quick attachment to those, and I really I really like them. But yeah, it's not a sure thing where I always know the title easily. Like it's sometimes it can be really challenging. I'm still kind of debating what I'm going to title my short story.
Hard.
I think I have something, but I'm not going to share it until it's like locked in.
Official.
But yeah. And I also do like to title my chapters. That's another thing that can be either really easy or really hard for me though. Like I have some chapter titles where I'm like, oh, that's so good. And then I have about like 6 to 8 chapters in the draft for A Knight of Knives that just say untitled chapter 16 or whatever. Like there's no.
Yeah.
I did experiment with naming them after like the character and then just doing like the number. I think GRM does that. I don't even know if he does
the
number anymore, but
I think he just does the name in each chapter. It's just the highlight. That way you know who you're like about to see murdered or, you know.
I did try that. And I quickly lost track of what chapter was what, even if they were, even if they were numbered, just having the title there helps me keep track of like, okay, I remember what happens.
Yeah.
So I do title them. And I like the chapter titles. I think they're fun to read. They add just that little extra bit of character and suspense, like, ooh, what's gonna happen?
Yeah, it is. I like that too. I've thought about that as well, instead of just like titling them each of their own like cool thing, but it's like some weird habit that I have. I can't get away from it. It's like, oh, here's the theme, I guess. I guess I'm just a theme person. I do like a themed party. I like a themed chapter. So anyway,
yeah, it makes sense. All right, well, that's all our publishing and book topics for the day. So we're going to move into our writing discussion. But as always, we have our work in progress writing check-in. So Ash, how was your, I think it was 2 weeks of writing. How has that been?
Yeah, so I did not update this. I forgot to do that. Have only gotten about like 500 to 600 words written for both stories. Last week I was on vacation, so I didn't really do much then. And then the week before that, just lots of busy stuff, family visiting and being out of town. So back to it, probably not this weekend. It is my birthday on Friday. I turned 30.
Oh, woo-hoo. Very cool. Well, happy birthday.
Thank you. So I will not be, I will not be doing anything this weekend aside from probably recovering. But yes, the goal is to just keep writing. I'm not too ashamed of the progress, but what about you?
All progress is good progress. I'm in the same camp. We, you know, 4th of July and lots of traveling and family in town, so I didn't get much writing. That I have a few hundred words across both. I did do some like a plotting work, but I don't usually count that as word counts or anything. But that was the majority of my creative time, I guess, if you will.
Nice.
Was spent on like plotting and organizational stuff, and then doing some stuff with the anthology. Like I sent some messages in the Discord about some marketing stuff.
Updates and marketing. Yeah, I know the more we add to our plate for like, you know, getting the podcast out there, or you know, adjusting for the podcast, and then there's a lot of apples to juggle. So we're doing fine. We're doing good.
Well, on that topic of staying organized with multiple responsibilities to handle, how, as a creator of a fictional world that you are like the god of, how do you organize all of those details and make sure you keep everything consistent in your writing so that your readers don't find all the little contradictions?
Okay, so I... I have been experimenting with a few different ways to stay organized. I have found that pen and paper are just usually my go-to. I like to jot down ideas. I have notebooks that I probably will never use for the rest of my life, but have like one word in them that I, whatever, you know. But I really enjoy like the act of writing things down. When I am working on plotting, though, I tend to keep it in a document. I have Scrivener. I really like Scrivener. I know it's kind of expensive, but I messed around with a few different programs, and I just ended up coming back to Scrivener after trying a few others.
Yeah.
And Scrivener has a lot of great tools, a lot of like digital note cards and subchapters and book. Like, you can organize things really easily. It's very like circa 2009 WordPress style, in my opinion. But yeah, I like that because I can just have one whole book on just chapter outlines, and then I have another where it's the actual chapters, chapter by chapter. So I like having things broken out physically into like chapter one is its own document, chapter two is its own document.
Right.
I find to me that helps me see how much I have, where things are. I don't have to control F to find things. I can just be like, okay, that was chapter four. Let me go back there.
Mm-hmm.
So I am a very, I don't know, if you just think of an outline, like a bullet point outline with the indents, that's kind of how my mind works.
Yeah.
Even when I write on the whiteboard, I tend to do like part one, okay, part one, A, part two, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think the three main things that my ideas are scattered through is like a notebook that I've had for 10 years. That's falling apart at this point. The whiteboard, and then the online, Scrivener tools. I tried note cards for a while, but found that I was limiting myself if I wanted to start like going off and just like go with the flow of things. That yeah, it just limited me too much. And then the whiteboard has been really helpful for that too, but in a similar way, like eventually I run out of space.
Yeah.
So then just being able to type out fast and quickly for outlining things really, really helps. And then I'll slow down and go in my actual notebook. And like, if I'm stuck on a scene, I'll physically handwrite at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And then the more my hand starts to move quicker and quicker and my handwriting starts to get messier and messier, I'll put it down and like start typing again. Okay. So it doesn't really sound very helpful or whatever, but that's if just kind of how my, yeah, that's how my mind is structured. I also have a history, like a whole history that I've written of the world. So if there are any plot, I know this is so long-winded, I'm so sorry.
No, you're right.
So I have a whole history that I can reference if I'm forgetting like a timeline on something. And if I need to make a connection, which is usually the hardest thing to continue on doing if it's chapters ahead, is sticky notes. Yeah. It's like, this has to be something that you bring back in the future. Easily lost, but I have my little writing nook, which you guys are in right now. So things tend to stay here. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that is all. What about you? How do you stay organized?
Well, do I stay organized is probably a better question.
Yeah.
Oof. So I don't think I've found like what works 100% for me yet. I still experiment with different things. Mm-hmm. A lot of the information for my story is contained in like two documents. So I have the outline, which has mm-hmm. the character outlines, it has the plot outlines, and other important details that I kind of like need to go to as I'm writing. Mm-hmm. And then what I have for usually one for each story, sometimes I'll break it up if it gets too long, is like, I call it my master document. And this has mm-hmm. all of like the world building details, timelines, religion details, like literally yeah. everything that I think I'm going to need to reference at some point.
Right.
And they can get pretty long. Like, I think the one I have for A Knight of Knives is, it's at least 50 pages, and I don't think it's done. Like, I'm still adding to it as I write, just so I remember things. That's not even the longest one I have. I have one that's for another story that is like, it's probably close to 100 now. And that
Holy
one is
Holy cow.
Be, that is a lot. I will say that one's a lot of like character names though. Because that story has
just 100 pages of names.
That story has so many characters that I do I legitimately get them confused, because some of the, I do like a George R. R. Martin thing where some of the names sound very similar.
Oh,
and it
sure.
gets difficult to keep track of. So I really have to have that like character index on there so that
yeah.
I can, oh, okay, no.
That's so fascinating.
The two letter difference between these two names,
Yeah. You need like a Rolodex. You need like a physical Rolodex. And then you yeah. can just like, rink, and then pull out the character card and be like, all right, who are we talking about now?
Yeah.
That's so fascinating. So follow up real quick mm-hmm. before you continue. Do you find having it all in one place to be like soothing to you or comfortable for you? Because if I have everything in one document, that's too much in one. Like, I can see the little scroll.
Yeah.
You know, marker like being really thin, and I'm like, oh my god. So, but that seems like it works for you. That doesn't intimidate you at all.
So it depends. I do have like two different ways of doing it. One is it's mm-hmm. not actually one document; it's one folder on my PC, and then it's,
I see.
Then I do break it up. That's what I'm trying to do with that larger one. I like most of it is in one document, but I'm trying to spread it out because that one is getting a
sure.
little unwieldy. For A Knight of Knives. I just have it on Google Docs right now where I can do like the headings that I can jump to and then the subheadings
okay.
and things like that. So that,
sure.
that one's not overwhelming yet. Not to say it won't ever be. So it really just depends on the length. Like that second one, I think
okay.
got too big and was
yeah.
a little, and it to the point where like Microsoft Word was slow loading it. So I was like, okay, I can't sit here for
it's
10
time.
Minutes.
Yeah.
And then if I had to scroll back up, it was like, oh my god, I'd get another 5 minutes.
Just crash. I need to like crash close it and reload. Yeah.
Yeah. But I do like to reduce like the amount of files and documents as much as possible.
Yeah. Okay.
Because I don't like to, I just like to have it open while I'm writing so I can easily reference. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to have to open like 10 documents.
Yeah, I feel that.
But also understand that some people do want it like split up like that. It just works better for me the other way.
Nice. That's so simple, but it's also like, it's so funny to hear how other people stay organized. And I've seen like so many people on here who have like crazy, not crazy in a bad sense, but just like so much detail put into how they stay organized and
right.
How they do, excuse me. Oh, goodness. Sorry.
You're all good.
You know, how they do this, that, and the other. And it's always been fascinating to me. Yeah, like what works for your brain. I think at my core, my concept of staying organized really hasn't changed since college. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, a binder full of different sections with different things. And that just tends to be on the computer. But I have to have like sections for each thing. It can't just be like all in one. So yeah, fascinating.
Yeah, I definitely need to make use of the headings and subheadings. Like if there weren't any of those and it was just
all
one big block of
that's
text,
what I'm envisioning. Yeah. No, but if you've got that.
I couldn't do that. I couldn't do all of it the same font size. And, yeah.
God. Yeah. No way.
That'd be a nightmare.
And I would lose it.
All right. Well, that's how we sort of stay organized. So let's move on to the next topic. Writing groups and workshops. This isn't something I have personally done before, but I wanted to get your thoughts because I know some people do really work better in like groups and writing workshops. Is this something you've ever partaken in before or would if you had the chance?
Yeah, so I didn't necessarily, I don't think it's considered a workshop, but I did go to a writer's conference earlier this year.
That's right.
And I was able to like give my first page and get critiqued and then like give my spiel on A Filthy Hunger and get feedback. I find that to be really useful, especially if your workshop has people in the industry. Mm-hmm. Understanding that it can be intimidating because for all the obvious reasons, but even if you just go to one workshop a year, let's say, I think that can just give you a lot of, it can recenter you in a way that you don't realize. Mm-hmm. Same with writing groups. I used to be in writing groups, a few of them back in high school, and I was the poetry editor at my undergrad's and we would workshop stuff together of our own, you know, our own works and all that kind of stuff. I'm losing the ability to speak, but I have always found them really beneficial. I think if you're someone who wants to be published, it's just good practice to immediately start, even though you and I are kind of not great at it, sharing bits of your writing, getting feedback, even if it's in a smaller working group. It doesn't have to be flashy, even if it's the first couple paragraphs. Just getting someone else's perspective, even if it's not their genre, even if they're not interested in it, can be so immensely helpful. So yeah, I'm a full supporter of writing groups and workshops if you can afford them. I know workshops tend to be a little bit more on the expensive side, but almost every single place in the U.S. has a writing group that you can find. And if there isn't one, if you live in a small town, or maybe you want to start like an introverted writing group where you don't really talk, you know, there are tons of ways to do that. Share your writing and then everyone writes something down and no one really has to speak, but do it. I think that's really helpful. And gets rid of those like initial early stage nerves.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I've never personally been part of like a writing group with other writers. Something that's, it's always been kind of intimidating to me just because I'm a very slow writer. So, at least some of the ones I've seen, when there's like an exercise, like, okay, everybody, you have 15 minutes. We're all going to write something. I can't do stuff like that just because I really have to sit with my writing for like a long period of time and then polish it up before I'm ready to share it. But I'm not opposed to like getting feedback from other writers or anything. It's just the early process of drafting something is a really like private process for me. And I like to, I really like to pretty things up before I share it, if that makes sense.
But I also think to push back a bit on that though, I think that's why writing groups can be really beneficial for that reason, because if you're working on a grander story, that makes sense, but there is something to be said about you've got 20 minutes, here's the topic, now write as much as you can.
Yeah.
It just is a good way to exercise a muscle that kind of just gets stuck in this one space.
Right.
I kind of suggest that for people when they're like starting a writing session to just get a prompt and like write for 10 minutes on the prompt to get those juices flowing. So you know how well you work and you write, but you know, if you're someone who has to sit for a really long time, flexing the quick muscle of just like coming up and just writing something for 20 minutes with people who can then give feedback might spark something. You never know.
Yeah. Just wanted to give a quick welcome to Seth. He joined our live. Thank you for the likes.
Hi, Seth.
Pirate Captain. But yeah, no, I mean, I would love to. And hearing that you enjoyed your experience with writing groups and mm-hmm. like the encouragement to do it, I might look into, you know, seeing if there's any in my area, because
yeah.
I think it would, I always want to get more eyes on the early writing that yeah. I have. It's just, I'm very selective sometimes when it comes to that.
Sure.
But
Discord's a great place too. Like, it doesn't have to be an in-person writing group. It can be, I'm on a writing Discord, a couple of them, ours for the anthology, but outside of that,
Sorry, I lost your audio for a second. I'm not sure if it's me or... I can't hear you. Everyone in the chat, can you guys hear me or Ash or neither of us? Okay, you can hear me. All right, let's give Ash a minute. This is our last day recording with this software. We're going to be switching software for those of you who have not been with us for the whole episode, but basically it's going to fix all of our technical difficulties and quality issues. So
am I back?
I can hear you. I'm gonna give chat a second okay. to say if they
can other hear people you. Hear me.
All right, yeah, he says
okay back. Perfect, thanks Seth. Sorry, a random number called me and I hit end and phone didn't like that, but yes,
that's okay.
Sorry, thanks for sticking with us.
Yeah, I was just mentioning the new software we're going to be switching to and how
yes.
it'll fix stuff like that from happening. So
exactly.
But sorry, if you were, I think it cut you off. So I don't know if you remember where you were or if you just want to.
I was just saying Discord is also a great place if you're someone who doesn't like to go in person or yeah. doesn't want to hear whatever. Yeah, there are some great ones out there. And then they have like writing sprints and you can share. And so yeah, there are plenty of options that I would highly suggest doing. The end.
All right. Well, I don't really have anything else to add because I don't have a cool. lot of experience other than I want to explore more writing groups in the future.
Yeah.
Next topic. This is kind of a follow-up from one we did a couple weeks ago where we talked about protagonists and then antagonists. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about supporting characters. They're not, maybe not as exciting, but when... Mm-hmm. We talked about how we write protagonists and antagonists and what makes them compelling for us as readers. So mm-hmm. some of my favorite characters in fiction would probably be considered side characters, especially if I look at like A Song of Ice and Fire. There are some characters who aren't as prevalent in the books, but still hold like a very dear place to me. So mm-hmm. do you have any characters like that? And then as a reader, what kind of makes a side character or a supporting character compelling to you, and how does that affect mm-hmm. your writing?
I love side characters or supporting characters. I think you can't have a good story without at least one that it just, I don't know. I think it adds a type of texture and makes the world that you're in. Oh, bye Nicole. Thank you for joining.
Thanks Nicole.
Yeah, it just makes the world that the story is happening in feel a little bit more authentic. We all think that we're the main character in our lives, obviously. Like, it's just like, that's where the joke comes from, like, main character syndrome. But, you know, we wouldn't be who we were without our supporting characters. So I love them. They're some of my favorite to write. I adore all of my side characters. So much so that if there is success with A Filthy Hunger, there will probably be novellas about the side characters and how they came to be in the past.
I personally use side characters as a way to challenge my two main characters, in multiple ways. And I think that without those supporting characters, my characters would just kind of glide through the plot, without much tension aside from the, plot's tension itself. Yeah, I think what makes a good supporting character to me is I like one that's the antithesis to the main character. This can be in in the form of a best friend or an enemy that ends up becoming an ally, or even just a good enemy, supporting enemy. I think it has to be a challenge. It can't just be like, this is my best friend, because even best friends challenge you. So I think that's where some supporting characters fall flat, is that there's not enough like pushback with the main character. Yeah, I think that's really what makes it. They need to come in and out pretty regularly too. You can't just like throw a supporting character in there unless their supporting role is to be like a death or something tragic or a betrayal, and then that's it and we're done with that. But I think they need to kind of flow in and out of the story in both important moments and not important moments. If a character is struggling with something, that's usually when the supporting character comes in to, provide some assistance or derail, which is always a fun way to make something happen. It's just like, this is a good idea, I support, and the reader is like, this is a horrible idea, why are you saying yes to this? Yeah, they add variety, they add texture to a story. And so I have a lot of fun writing them. I have to be very careful to not run away with them. I have to be like, you get 15 minutes of screen time and then we have to go, but I love you. Bye-bye. So yeah, that's how I feel about supporting characters. What about you?
Kind of going back to the point you made about pushback and they're not just being there to agree with the main character all the time. I think the most important thing for me is to see that they have agency. Like they have their own wants and needs and goals and actions, and that doesn't necessarily always have to align with what the main character wants, or the protagonist or the antagonist if it's a supporting character on that side. But yeah, just I like them to feel like real people. So you had mentioned, we're all the main character of our own story. So if looking at it from that perspective, I like them to feel like the people around me, right? Like not just cardboard cutouts that are there to say like, yeah, good job to everything you do. Is I want them to feel like their own person, like not just NPCs, if you will. And bonus points for I don't really know how to put this into words, but there are some side characters that are just like they're on screen for such a short amount of time or on the page, but they have such a strong presence in that moment that they're there, that they're sometimes more memorable than some of the larger characters. And so I don't really know how to define, I guess, what, like, other than strong presence, how to do that. But those are two things that I look for in my supporting cast, and I kind of consider when I'm writing supporting characters, is they need to have agency, and I want to give them a strong presence. Now, granted, not every character needs to have that strong presence. I feel like that would feel kind of weird if every character kind of dominated the scene they were in. They would all be vying for the reader's attention, and that's not necessarily the goal. But to have a couple in there that do, that's kind of a goal that I have with
Yeah, I agree.
as I write some of them.
Yeah. No, I think that's perfect. I love side characters. They're truly my favorite. I think that's like everyone's, I don't know, it tends to, in fandom in general, I think side characters tend to become often bigger than the actual main characters. I know that's like Harry Potter, like side characters like Draco Malfoy, not really a huge, like, obviously important, but not the main character. And then he just like kind of became someone that everyone wanted to write about. And, yeah. Anyway, good. That was a good topic.
So you mentioned Draco, but before we move on to the next topic, do you have any other that come to mind that are like really that you can think of, like this is a really good example of a well done supporting character or?
Now you put me on the spot and now I'm blanking just to, after saying I love these side characters.
That's okay.
I'm blank. Yeah, I'm like blanking at this point, but they're out there.
Yeah. No, that's
I
okay.
think, you know, like Sam is a good supporting. Oh, Gene from Lies of Buckmore is a good one, Seth. I think Sam, like, he plays a huge role, but he's a supporting character in Lord of the Rings, right? He helps Frodo. Most of Lord of the Rings side characters are great. Yep, that's all I've got. I have them. I'll come back next time we're on and
that's
just
okay.
be like, here are my favorite side characters.
I'm gonna put two out there, both from different eras of A Song of Ice and Fire. One from the books and one that I think Jorah Mormont's a good one. He was not
oh,
one
yeah,
of the ones I was gonna
one.
Say, but that is all there's so many in A Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah.
But so from House of the Dragon, which I've been watching season two, Helaena Targaryen, they really took her book role and expanded on it in a lot of really cool ways, mm-hmm. With the approval of George R. R. Martin. So I like that he approves of the changes.
Nice.
But she's a really interesting character. Doesn't really dominate the scenes, but she's so, I don't really know how to, she's so like mysterious now in the show. She has this, these visions, and every time she says something, you kind of latch onto it. Like, okay, is this important? Because she makes these like one-liners that are sometimes like prophetic in nature. And so you kind of latch on to everything she says.
Yeah.
Another one that's kind of just fun and comedic relief is Dolorous Ed from the Night's Watch. He's just like depressingly funny. Like he's got this really dark, self-loathing sense of humor. And I just really like him because when John and Sam are talking on the page or something, and then Dollar Side comes in with like a really dark comment that's supposed to be funny, but it's also like, are you okay,
like,
dude?
Do you need to take a nap? Is everyone fine? You reminded me of Varys from Game of Thrones. Master of Whispers. I always liked him as like a supporting side character, just like good at his job, but also you want to know more, but you're not really going to get much more. And he was always involved somehow. I hate who's the new guy.
In House of the Dragon?
Yeah.
Is Larys the Clubfoot?
Larys? That's so funny. Varys and Larys.
Yeah, I know.
yeah. Like, so I hate him. I hate him.
We're talking about the creepy one, right?
Yeah, the foot fetish guy. Yeah. He like murdered his brother. Like, what are you doing? Anyway, I mean, that's pretty normal around here. But yeah, there are so many good ones. I'm at a loss. But yeah, those are some solid choices.
Shared some good ones. Every side character from The Expanse. Seth is probably gonna hate me for this, but I have not seen Lost or read or seen The Expanse.
Yes. How dare you? But I'm just kidding. I have no idea.
Just Seth is signing off.
Yeah, he's like, peace out.
I think Lost was just a little before my time, Seth, but it's something that I always hear good things about. I'm afraid that if I like try to get into it, I'm not gonna click with it as much as people did when it came out.
You'd be surprised.
You think so?
Yeah, I think you'd be surprised. It's one of those like sneaker ones, like it starts off like one way, and then by the end you're like, oh my God. But there is a sense of like you had to be there, but I don't think it would be, I think you would be into it. I think you would be like, I got to go like get my t-shirt and you know, whatever like people used to do. No, but it was very much like it was a national blah.
So also one thing I hear about Lost, read the Expanse books. Don't start with the show. Okay. Noted.
Good to know.
I'll start with the books. Real quick question, a little tangent for the Lost show is the ending is bad as I've heard, like, or is it still worth watching?
It's worth watching.
Okay.
I think people got too upset because they had their fan theories about stuff, and there was so this is like obviously like back in the day when you didn't have like people immediately spoiling it for you, like within minutes of the episode dropping, like it was such a big you would talk about it with your coworkers or your friends at school the next day. So I think a lot of people had a lot riding, like, mentally on it because they were so invested after so many seasons. So I understand why there was a lot of disappointment for some people, but I remember being like, and I liked it. So yeah. I guess it just depends. Yeah.
There's been a few endings that I've seen that are like controversial, that I found out about and I experienced them myself. And I was like, I don't really see what's so bad about this.
Right.
I think part of it is like Seth says, like there's so many theories and so much buildup that it's almost like there's all these different sects of the fan base that you're not going to please them all. And that's totally fine. But yeah, maybe I'll check Lost out if I get a lull in my TV shows again. They like to take 2 year gaps. So
yeah. God, I know. I'm so over this like long, whatever. Anyway, that's its own tangent.
Well, real quick for our last writing topic of the day, probably the most commonly reiterated piece of writing advice I see, because it's a pretty safe one, is show, don't tell. So obviously I see a lot of people deconstruct this in different ways, but what does show, don't tell mean to you? Like, how do you interpret that in your writing, or do you just not think about that at all?
So it's actually... it can be really restrictive for me. It's one of my bigger like hiccups as I'm writing, and it compels me to go back and edit. I live and die by this show don't tell, because I think it's such a good trick to make sure that you are giving enough to your reader. Going back to what I said at the beginning, where it's like, I trust my readers. I know that they're going to get there, and I'm just kind of the guide to happen them along. But I think... okay, so I'll start with what I think is my issue and why it tends to trip me up sometimes. If there is a scene where I think I can explain something to the reader via my two characters interacting conversationally, I'm going to write that instead of, I'm mad at my mom, right? Take that like as a concept. Instead of writing a paragraph of Kara was mad at her mom because she was always crappy to her and always wanted her to dress a certain way and do this and that, and she like never respected her time. That to me is telling versus them having a conversation about a topic and showing the dynamic work in conversation.
Yeah.
Kara says, leave me alone. Mom says, no. And then we kind of go from there. So I think... Seth has a good point. I think we misinterpret show don't tell to mean like extraneous writing, right? Like that's where I tend to get caught up. Like I don't need to have every interaction reveal something.
Yeah.
I can write a couple paragraphs on the history of something for the reader. It doesn't have to be this like big to do. But I'm going to lean more heavily towards, I'm going to do that as much as possible. Only because that's one of my things that will make me DNF a book, right? Is like, if you're giving me paragraphs and paragraphs where, like, nothing is happening and you're just telling me the history of something or explaining why this character is upset because of this versus seeing it in action, then that's when we have a problem. So, yeah, if that explains it a little bit, I know I'm kind of, like, messing around with my words. But it is like, my number one rule. Like, show, don't tell. Yeah, like... of course, explain things. Like, you need to tell people certain things that aren't going to come up in natural conversation, but make that triggered by an event, right? Make that triggered by something that has occurred naturally in your story, rather than just being like, we're walking into a building. Here's the history of the building, you know? Yeah, it's, you have to have a variety of that. So those are my thoughts on showing, don't telling.
Yeah, you and Seth both put it really well, so I don't have too much to add. I've kind of, the biggest way I've taken this, because I don't really have a problem with, like, exposition dumping. I feel like I'm pretty good at avoiding that. One thing that I do struggle with is kind of like, how do I want to, trying to think of the right words for this, displaying emotion and certain things like that. So I try to do that via showing a lot more, like consciously. To me, one of the biggest ways I, you know, use the show don't tell advice is, rather than say this character does something a certain way, describe the action. Like, don't just say she walked away angrily or something like
yeah, how did she
how did she walk away that didn't that yeah, makes she you think she's angry. Yeah, something like yeah, that. So right. I think that's I do it in like I think of it in little scenarios like mm-hmm. that. Obviously the obvious like don't exposition dump.
Yeah.
But I do think you guys are right. Like, you can naturally tell things through character conversations mm-hmm. because if you don't use dialogue as a tool to convey information to your reader, yeah. then what are you using yeah. it for? Like, that's a valid tool for conveying the story. It just mm-hmm. you just have to make it feel natural. And actually touching on that, that's also another DNF or thing that I don't like that we were talking about earlier. I've read some stories where characters, like, in the first few pages, they'll introduce themselves, like, as if they're introducing themselves to you, but they've been yeah. best friends for 10 years. So it's like,
yeah,
hello,
right.
my best friend that I've known for 10 years. I can't stand that.
Yeah.
It doesn't need, you don't need to do that. But,
yeah.
Yeah, no, I,
and I think
same
that is
with, sorry, yeah, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I interrupted you.
I was just wrapping up saying, like, yeah, same page as you and Seth. And I try to, I think for me, it's most obvious in, like, those smaller interactions and mm-hmm. ways of conveying emotion to the reader, I mm-hmm. guess.
Yeah, I was going to add on to that. And it can be really intimidating to hear that phrase, like, show, don't tell. And mm-hmm. I'm not coming at it either as, like, someone who is an expert. But I think it is also a skill that gets slowly honed over right. time. The more you write about situations that aren't your day-to-day, which is going back to the prompt like piece of advice, like, but you know, it's like you stretch before you go exercise, so why not stretch before you write?
Yeah,
find a prompt and try and do that, you know. But yeah, it's a skill. Not many people, like, I think pay attention to it early on as they're starting to write. I think it's okay if you just need to get everything down. I have a friend who, she just is like, I just need to get the conversation on page. And then I have white room syndrome, but I'm going to fill that in later.
Yeah.
If, like, all you need to do is exposition and tell, mm-hmm. and then work your conversation through and delete, like, there are many different ways to do it. But yeah, I think that's the number one downfall for a lot of people is that.
Yeah. There's thunder. Sorry if that's coming through on the mic. But
oh, it does. Ooh, send it this way.
But yeah, no, those are. I don't have anything to add.
Sorry.
Thunder distracted
and
me.
And that's that. No, that's okay.
I don't think you have one either. But correct me if I'm wrong. I do not have a weekly writing resource this week. I could not find one.
Either us. We are the writing resource. We're gonna plug our. We're going to plug the new Instagram again.
Yes, there we go.
Quill and Query Podcast on Instagram and quillandquerypodcast@gmail.com. That'll be your writing resource for the week is us.
Yeah. Thanks, Seth. We're going to hop off.
Bye, Seth. It's good to see you. Yeah. Thanks for coming.
But yeah, we are your weekly writing resource. Good save, Ash. I like that. and I think it's just us, but I'm going to give, like,
yeah.
two more seconds. See ya, pirate okay. captain.
Bye.
Have a good night. And, yeah, I'm going to just give chat, like, a minute, if anyone's here, to share their questions or feedback. But while we wait for that, do you have any closing thoughts you want to leave the viewers with for the next 2 weeks?
Nope. Just enjoy the writing, enjoy the reading. No one is standing over your shoulder judging you for how little or how much you are doing. So just take it as it comes.
I don't have anything to just follow our new Instagram for updates. I didn't know how to follow that up. I was like so brain dead.
I don't know. I'm the same way. I'm just at this point rambling. I'm like, I need to go outside and maybe take a walk before I just completely melt into my couch and become something unattractive. Yeah.
I think this week break will be good, and we'll come back with a nice, like,
agreed,
fresh podcast, and yeah, everything will be good.
Totally.
And for those of you who are listening on the RSS website, I will mark all the new episodes as, because it gives me seasons, so this is technically season one, I guess. I'll do all the new stuff as season two, so you can easily identify like what was where with what software. So yeah. Be season two of Cool and Query.
Let's give ourselves a pat on the back, even though no one is here live right now, but we've done a good job of keeping consistent, and yeah, I'm really just proud of us. Even if like season two no one listens at all, it doesn't matter. I'm excited we've done this.
Yeah, no, I think we've done really good with these first 12 episodes, especially like content wise and consistency, and then the quality improvements and everything will come. And I think statistically speaking, we are more likely to increase our viewers since we're expanding our social media presence and everything like that. So I think growth is all but assured. Just don't know how much it's going to be, but
we'll take anything. Yes. We'll take anything.
All right. Well, I think it's about time to wrap up. Ash, as always, thanks so much being my co-host, so I don't talk into the void here. And thanks again for all your work on the social media sites as well.
Happy to help. All right. I will see you in 2 weeks.
All right. And have a happy birthday.
All right. Thank you. All right. Talk to you later. Bye.